Hello and welcome. It's another Ken Seven podcast. And what we are doing today, we're having a chat with a gentleman who's written a book about one of Liverpool's absolute legends. So, Peter, welcome to the Ken Seven podcast.
Thank you very much for having me. Nice to meet you. Nice to see you.
What's that, sorry?
Nice to meet you.
You too. Thanks for joining us. So I'm fascinated by this. And what's brilliant about this is I think we see so much TV footage, and we have done for years, and it's everything. If you want to go and watch something that's happened in the last 20, 30 years, you can just go on YouTube and have a look at it. The person we're going to talk about today, there's no footage of him, as far as I'm aware, anywhere, because it predates TV coverage of football matches. So, Peter, you've written a book about Billy Liddle. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the inspiration, about why you've written the book. And also, I mean, I'll ask you, obviously, who Billy Liddle was when we get to it. But just tell me about why you felt that you had to write this book.
Yeah, well, I've done the football writing for quite a while now. I think since I finished uni, I did history in uni, and basically my dissertation in my undergrad and my master's, I did on Merseyside football. So when I finished, basically I just realised I had a body of work I could split into articles, and then from there I just carried on writing. And I was lucky enough to write for the Liverpool programme and magazine a few times, and it was the editor, Dave Clotterill, he said to me, why don't you just pitch an idea for a book? And I never thought I'd be able to do it and all that, but I just thought, why not? So I spoke to my dad, and we both came up with a few ideas, and one of them was this one, obviously. And it's because my auntie, my dad's sister, is good mates with Rena Liddle, who's Billy's sister. She's still alive, lives about 2 minutes from the ground. She's a massive Liverpool fan, and she was just more than happy to help. So I just pitched the idea over, and obviously it coincided with it's his 100th birthday coming up in January. So it all just kind of worked together, really. And there's only been the book that he wrote. There's a book by John Keith, which was basically just after he died, which is more like looking at the book he wrote, really, and his life. But this one, I just thought it would give a different angle, because obviously it's been such a long time since he passed away. And I thought it was a good opportunity to speak to the people who were lucky enough to watch him, speak to ex-teammates, speak to family members, and just try and give a side of the story that hasn't been seen, really. So I just thought it all kind of worked well together, and here I am today.
No, absolutely brilliant, mate. So for those who don't know, people of a certain age who have no idea who Billy Liddle is, who was he? You know, what was he all about?
Yeah, well, hopefully I can answer that one. So he was just basically Mr. Liverpool. He was the main man. He was Steven Gerrard. He was Kenny Dalglish. He was Mr. Liverpool, and that's so much so the team was called Liverpool. He played for them from 1938 to 1961. He had offers left, right and centre. He could have left to anyone, but he stuck Liverpool through thick and thin. And the thinnest that they've ever been, finishing 11th in the second division, the lowest they've ever been. And he was part of that team, captain of the club. And you'd think anyone to do with that team would just be, we never want to speak about them again. But he was so good that he helped them finish 11th in the second division. That's how bad the team was. So he managed to keep them in the league. And unfortunately for him, he was right at the end of his career when Shankly came in. But if it wasn't for Billy Liddle, Shankly wouldn't have took over Liverpool, because the team wouldn't have been of a standard high enough for him at that time to take a second division side, because basically he just carried them through. They were missing out a few times on promotion, but basically he was able to hand them over to Shankly. And obviously just the stats he had are unbelievable. He was like top goal scorer. I think it was like 7 out of 9 seasons in a row. And that was for an outside left. He wasn't the number 9 striker. He playing like getting numbers Salah gets today, but doing it in a boggy pitch, in the 60s and 50s. So he was just a freak, really, is what he was, but in a good way.
His retirement, did that actually happen before the season before Shankly, or a couple of seasons before Shankly?
No, so Shankly took over 59 and he finished in 61, but it wasn't really 61 because he only played one game in the 60-61 season. And Phil Taylor, the manager before him, dropped him, and Shankly actually brought him back in, Phil, because Shankly came at mid-season, his first goal, and he brought Liddle back in because he just knew his experience would be useful for the squad. And obviously they played together they played together in wartime games for Liverpool, Shankly, and Liddell, and they played together for Scotland. So he obviously respected how good of a player he was. And, you know, maybe like the way when you see when Klopp had Clavan and stuff like that, I know, you know, you just that experience, someone who understands the way you want to play. Mm. I think that's what Billy helped them with the first season. And then
football obviously intelligence.
That's it, exactly. And he just knew that the team he had wasn't great, and he hadn't bought Ian St. John and Ron Yates yet. So he realised, you know, this is the man I need to try and get the morale up, and as an example, because, you know, he was such a great trainer and such a good professional. He just thought it was worth having him in. And obviously he was 38 when he left, so it was inevitable. He wasn't going to play every game, and obviously his career was going downhill. So it was a crossover. If it happened 10 years earlier, you know, Billy would have been Bill's best man. He would have been the man scoring all the goals. So unfortunate, but he was also lucky they had time together.
From your chats with people who knew him, what sort of, I mean, you touched on it briefly there, but just if you could expand, what sort of player was he?
Yeah, well, I think just a bit of everything. I think, you know, I think if you could combine James Milner and Mo Salah, I think that's probably the best comparison you could have, because he was just Mr. Fitness. He was a freak, as I said, because he was only part-time when all of his teammates were professionals, and full-time he wanted to keep doing his accountancy. So he only trained 2 days a week, but he was as fit as anyone because he just did all the sport outside of it. So, you know, he'd be leading the sprints and all that. But then again, it wasn't just that he was fitness, he was talented. He was scoring ridiculous amounts of goals, and assists weren't recorded then, so you can't track what he did. But for playing outside left, all the goals seemed to come from his free kick, his corner, or he'd be on the end of someone else's crosses on the other side. So he was just, yeah, a mad player, and he played in every single position other than in goal for Liverpool, because obviously it was the days before substitutions and that. So because he was so versatile, they put him centre back, they put him anywhere they needed him. He would have played in goal one game as well, but him and Ronnie Moran had to battle over who wanted to go in. Ronnie Moran got the shout. So he's literally just reading him, he just doesn't seem for real. One of his ex-teammates, Alex Self, I was lucky enough to speak with, he only played a couple of games for Liverpool, but he just said he was too good to be true. He was just, everything he did was perfect, and that's just what it seemed like, even researching him. He's just, there's no one's got a bad word to say about him.
Mm-hmm. And in the book, you've interviewed ex-players who played with him, but you've also interviewed players of more recent times, you know, Jamie Carragher, Alan Hansen, Ian Callaghan. What sort of things did they have to say? I mean, I think that bit would be fascinating.
Yeah, well, I used them for like a foreword, and obviously with the other people I spoke to, I've kind of like in between each chapter, I've called it like the people who put the pool into Liverpool, to just look at the other people who played, and I've tried to just give their voice in between each chapter. And obviously it's great to be able to speak to more recent players like, you know, Carragher and Hansen. I think for Hansen, obviously he was playing while Billy was still like involved with the club. He wasn't like, you know, any official capacity, but he'd go to every game and he'd be in the players' lounge. And being a fellow Scot, he was always eager to, you know, go over and speak to him and give him advice. But he was never like, you know, Alan Hansen was saying, he was never in like a braggy way or anything like that. It'd just be like, Alan Hansen would have to go and speak to him. He'd never go and like try and impose himself and say anything like that. So he just seemed like such a respectful man. And I think for Carragher as well, he was just saying like, the fact that, you know, Ronnie Moran was still coaching while he was playing, he was one of the main names he always used to beat the players with. You know, you're not as good as X, you're not as good as Y, the people who came before. But the fact that Billy Liddell was up there with the dominating teams of the 70s and 80s, and you know, to be considered that highly, it shows how good a player he was. So I think, you know, speaking to them, it shows how his legacy has lived on in the club, you know, whether it was while he was retired or after he passed away and all that. And then with Ian Callaghan, again, I was lucky enough to speak to him, and he was the man who builders taking his place. So I think for him, it was another interesting way of looking at it, just seeing like he felt pressure, but honour the fact that he was taking the great Billy Liddell's, you know, position and wearing his shirt and all that. So it was good, three different ways of looking at his career and his legacy.
Do you feel frustrated that people of our generation, I mean, I'm 45, but generation after mine as well, and you know, you're a lot younger than me, you're 25, do you feel frustrated that he isn't remembered? You know, they did that 100 players who shook the cup, or they've done that, you know, on the LFC TV, and they've done the 100 best players, I think. Yeah. And you know, Billy Liddell is I'm not sure where he is in that lineup, but he's certainly not in the top five. And do you feel frustrated that he isn't remembered, because there just isn't anything to watch him?
Well, I think, you know, he's been remembered as much as he can be remembered for someone from so long ago. And yeah. I can just touch on what we said then about speaking to Jamie Carragher. Obviously, he said, for the fact that, I don't know if you remember, when like last season, obviously, when there was no fans in, we had the mosaic of flags. So behind the goal was Billy's flag, and it was, you know, just by 104. And for someone who stopped playing over 60 years ago, it is ridiculous that he still remembered that highly. And it's hard because Liverpool have achieved so much. Like, your champions were all behind you there. Billy didn't really contribute to much of them. He won one league title and lost an FA Cup final.
Yeah.
So it's hard to compare them to people like Kenny and the dominating teams of the 70s and 80s who went on and won everything. But I think the best maybe tribute I can give him is that everyone who saw him play and saw Kenny and saw Stevie have all said that he was the best player they'd seen. And I know obviously it might be because I was looking for Billy Liddle fans that they might be the more biased or fanatical ones, but his legacy is that he's one of the most important people to play for the club. And, you know, he might not be top of the list now, but you can imagine in 50 years people will be forgetting who Gerrard was, and it'll be me and you, hopefully, and all people my age saying, "Oh no, I remember watching them," and, you know, you'll be the old bloke in the back of the pub. But it's just, that's what happens, isn't it? Just time passes on. But I think, well, he's got one of the benches outside the grounds, which I think is another really good tribute. And I just think there's only so much you can do when you've got people like Bill Shankly, Bob Paisley, you know, and you've got Kenny Dalglish, and they've all been honoured how they have. There's only so much you can do. I think for him to have a bench, to still have the flag, and, you know, for me to write a book about him, and, you know, obviously I picked it because of a family reason, but there's obviously something still there and people still want to talk about him. So, you know, if it was on my 100th birthday, someone's writing a book about me, then obviously, you know, you've done something right. So.
Of course. I mean, funnily, Neil Atkinson of the Anfield Rap always references, you know, being 50 years older and sat with his grandkids and going, "Listen, never mind about your lads now. Let me tell you about my lads, my lads who I used to go and watch," you know. And I think that's such a lovely picture of, you know, of the future. Because one of the things, I mean, before I get on to my next question, actually, the book's not out yet. So it's out in November. Where will people be able to buy it?
Yeah, so all the obvious places, on Amazon, WH Smith, Waterstones. And I've got something on my own website, which if people do, obviously, I get a larger cut of it, so that works better for me. But also, I've got like a little pre-order deal, so I've managed to get like some programs reproduced. I've got one here, other up there. But I've got like some programs of his best games, like the FA Cup final 1950, his testimonial, some from the league winning campaign 46-47, got a Scotland game, and then his younger brother, I managed to get his autograph book. So it's like, I think it was like 46-47 season. He followed into every game and he got autographs of everyone. So it just adds to the history of it a bit and adds to the story. So obviously, if you're interested in that, or you can just get a signed copy or just buy it anywhere. I don't care if you want to just, whatever you want to do with it. If you buy one, I'm happy. That's fine.
Well, before I let you go, what do you think of this current team? You know, you obviously, I'm guessing you're a big Liverpool fan because there's Liverpool memorabilia all behind you and you've written a Liverpool book. So, I mean, what do you think about this current team?
I think I am a big fan, if that's allowed. I covered all the games, so I was there at AC Milan and all that the other day. So, it's just, I think last season was a freak, but it feels like it didn't happen because no one was there. So it feels like, you know, last time you remember going, we were boss and we're boss again. It feels like, you know, it's early days this season. So you just feel lucky to watch it, don't you? I always feel like next season, rather than think we're going to win the league again, I always think it could all be over, so you just got to try and enjoy what's happening. And, you know, the days of Roy Hodgson and stuff like that seem like a far distant memory, and I'm just worried what happens when Klopp goes and all that. So I just try and enjoy the moment, and I think the team we've got is unbelievable, and people moan about the squad depth and they want people out and all that, but you see Divock Origi the other day and the assist he plays for that second goal, and he gave 110% and people are on his back. I just think you need to appreciate what we've got and how good our team is, and hopefully we keep Salah down, with, you know, get a contract with him, with all the rest of them, and I just think good times can keep coming, hopefully, and the more finals and more wins we can watch together, it's just, can't wait to see it.
I mean, the two games that I've been to so far, I couldn't go to the Chelsea game because I had COVID, but the Burnley game and the other night, I don't want the game to end. And I've never experienced that before because I've been going since I was eight, and being sat in the stadium just feels different now. And it's, I have this thing where I'm looking at the clock going, oh, we've only got 10 minutes left. And that's not a, we've only got 10 minutes left in the game. It's, I've only got 10 minutes left to enjoy this.
Yeah.
Which I've never, ever experienced before. And the whole COVID thing certainly has made me appreciate how lucky I am to have a season ticket. I mean, I don't know whether you've got a season ticket. Have you felt like that as well?
Yeah, well, I've got a membership, but I've been to every game since 2010. So I just have to buy them all, but I haven't missed one. But yeah, I think me, it's well, like, emotional. It's, you never walk alone. Every game of season, absolutely, it's took me, like, obviously with what's gone on, and my mum's not very well at the moment and stuff like that. So it's just, every time you sing it, it feels like, you know, you're singing it to, everyone's singing it to you, and we're singing it to, like, properly singing it together. And it just feels great to be back in. And yeah, as you say, you realised how much you missed it. I was thinking it last year. It just doesn't feel the same. I know you might feel like, because a lot of people want to go and you feel lucky the fact you get to go every game, but when you sat at home and watching it every week, it just doesn't feel like you're as part of it as what it did when you go on the ground every other week. So it just, you know, feel lucky to be back, and you just want to savour every moment, and you want to get in as early as you can and stay as late as you can, don't you? So I get that, having a few more pints before and after as well. But but yeah, no, it is great to be back, and yeah, hopefully we just do something good this year, something to celebrate at the end would be great.
Lovely stuff. Well, listen, thanks very much for your time, Peter. I really appreciate it. Good luck with the book. I hope your mum's all right, by the way, as well.
Thank you very much.
All the best with that. Listen, if you're watching this on YouTube, don't forget to hit that subscribe button, hit the bell for notifications, and if you can share it on your social media for us, that would really help. Peter, thanks very much, mate. You take care.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me. Lovely to speak to you.